The 1950s, Australia was on the cusp of a great cultural change, particularly artistic change. Exploring the early modernist art movement deep in Sydney suburbia, Yellow Yellow Sometimes Blue is a new theatre work written by Noelle Janoszewska and presented by Q Theatre, inspired by real-life couple Gerald and Margot Lewis. Joining us on the line to tell us more is director Nick Atkins. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
How are you going?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
So this play, it's set on the Emu Plains by the Nepean River, and it actually follows the real-life couple, Gerard and Margot Lewis. For people who don't know, who are they?
Yeah, so just to be very clear, so it's very much inspired by, it's kind of Gerald and Margot form a bit of a context for the play, but it's not their story explicitly, but more kind of how they shaped or impacted the community in the area at the time. Mm. So they are there, but they're kind of like the gods of the place, so to speak. But Margot and Gerald Lewis were kind of a very significant kind of cultural family icons for the time. They were quite a wealthy couple that set up a homestead in Emu Plains where they you know, raised a family, but they also conducted their own art practices. But perhaps more importantly, they became very well known for holding these pretty raucous dinner parties where they invited some of the really emerging and vibrant voices of the time out to Emu Plains to have a drink, have a discussion, and to kind of consider the next big thing Sydney's arts and cultural scene.
Yeah. And so this play follows a couple named Leo and Iris. So where do they kind of sit in this context?
So Leo and Iris are both, I suppose, kind of characters drawn from their more social context of the time. So Leo is a Hungarian migrant who settled into the area and is working in one of the quarries that was being kind of quarried at the time. And Iris is a young girl growing up at the base of the Blue Mountains. So they're both characters that are actually kind of excluded from the quite privileged world that Margot and Gerald were working in and moving in. We kind of see them... Basically, they're catering the night. So we enter the world through the eyes of the help, and we kind of get to peek into that that world that's going on through their perspective, if that makes sense. So there's two outsiders peering in at a world of privilege.
Mm. I mean, 1950s, it was like great change was happening, especially particularly after the war. So how did that kind of spark the modernist art movement in Australia and see that kind of migration that you see through Leo and Iris?
Yeah. To be really frank, my background is a theatre maker, so I don't feel comfortable being able to speak about perhaps the emergence of modernism specifically. But this play, I think what it looks at is it captures the energy of that time, some of the ideas that were going on, and looks at how they were sparking the journeys of those emerging figures. For example, the show really centres on Iris's coming to terms with her desires to be an artist herself, and how she wrestles with that in the context of the 50s, which there wasn't a whole lot of space for women to be leaders and leaders in the arts and cultural space at the time. So it looks how modernism was starting to give different people and different perspectives a new language or a new pathway through which to express themselves, which they might have not had that space up until that point, if that makes sense.
Mm. For you as a director, how was it kind of like transporting back into the 50s, I guess, and kind of bringing that design onto the set and whatnot?
Yeah, really exciting, but also really terrifying. because as I said too, I come from a theatre practice. I'm not a visual artist, but we spent a lot of time with Penrith Regional Gallery, who works as part of our organisation, to make sure that we had oversight on that stuff and a real critical and rigorous engagement. It was also really exciting to work with designer Katia Hunt, who I think did a great job at both kind of catching a sense of that period and really creating a design and a world which is rigorous to detail, but is not bogged down by it either. I mean, this is a contemporary theatre work. It's made for today, for audiences today. So we have really wrestled with how we both create the world, but not, I suppose, get too stuck in the naturalism of it, in the sense that it might make it perhaps dated on the nose. This is very much forward-facing, despite context.
Yeah. I mean, you say, you know, the role of women, it was very restricted in what they could do, and especially in art. Do you still kind of, did you kind of want to reflect that as well and how we see female artists today as well and how they still do struggle?
Yeah, well, and again, and coming from a theatre perspective, it's a pretty tough time at the moment. Obviously, there are some very iconic and significant cases in the media that I think are really starting to discuss and expose some pretty systemic challenges that women are faced in the rehearsal room and in the theatre sector more broadly. It's been really exciting to work. It's not the first time I've worked with Noel Janicheska, but Noel is a real veteran playwright who stood the test of time. So to have her as a bit of a leading light on this project is really exciting. And also Kate Worsley, who plays the role of Iris, is a pretty remarkable Western Sydney theatre maker who is a very capable actor, but is also a director and a performance maker in her own right. So, also the work of the cellist Camille Hay is just beautiful. So I've been very fortunate to have a room which is very much led by a bunch of pretty amazing women. So to have that perspective and that voice in the room is helpful. But, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question specifically. I'm conscious that it's something we really need to talk about more, and I'm probably not the best person to talk about it either.
That's fair. But also performing in the play is Adam Booth. How's he?
What a winner. this is the first time I've worked with Adam. It's been such a pleasure to work with. He's such a rigorous, patient, and really disciplined actor. To give a bit of context for the show too, it's in our Black Box studio, which is about a 70-seater space at the Joan. It operates out of the Joan, which has three performance spaces. This is our most intimate. And to watch artists of the calibre of Kate and Adam play in that intimate context, it's just, what a night. I really recommend it highly. So, yeah, working with Adam has been really, really top.
Mm. You also mentioned that Miley Hay is doing the live music. What does that bring to your show, particularly having a live cellist there?
Yeah. So Noelle's style of writing can be really kind of moved between more natural theatrical classic forms and a very heightened poetic form. So early on in the piece, we identified the need, not the need, but that live music would really help that in a way. It's kind of tricky to move between a classic scene and, a piece of poetry. So the role Miley has played, she's a Blue Mountains-based musician who's worked in film composition as well as her own music practice, and this is probably her first gig more so in the live art space. Miley, like I said, she scores the whole thing, and she's a really beautiful presence on stage just to have that that figure. It also kind of disrupts, I think, the pretense that it is all 1950s to some extent. But she basically helps us weave between those worlds really seamlessly, so audiences can kind of travel the logic of it on a musical way, even if the scene construction might not be in their classical dramatic form. Does that make sense? I got a bit muddled there, but I think there was an answer amongst all that clutter.
And finally, when people go and see this play, what do you want them to take away from the performances?
Yeah, it's a really good question. What I've enjoyed so far, we've had some really positive responses from audiences. People are really excited. They come out really revved up. There is a sense of nostalgia, and we're kind of unapologetic about that. I think what I've been excited by is the pride that audiences have been feeling. They kind of come out excited by this kind of underground history of Western Sydney and Penrith specifically that is not overly well known, but is really forward looking. I don't think Penrith is often associated with particularly progressive or more forward-facing art movement, despite the fact that it does have a bit of a radical history. So I kind of hope people come and get really energised by it, kind of to reimagine the landscape that they're in, and we can be excited by all the possibilities that can happen in those outer metropolitan contexts, because they can be hotbeds of new ideas and movements and people. And I just wanted to reconnect with that and become re-energised by it.
Well, we are certainly seeing that in Western Sydney at the moment, with everything that's happening in Parramatta, Blacktown, Casula.
Casula, Fairfield, Granville, it's off the charts. It's really exciting. I feel really blessed to be able to work among the ecosystem that is becoming seen across Western Sydney. We are only one player in it, but it's the back and forth that is super exciting at the moment.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining us here on It's So Hot Right Now.
No problem. Thanks for having me.